and the passive resistance, the kind of resistance that started with Mahatma Gandhi at one of the most important figures of it, and another one at Martin Luther King. And during the Nazi reign in Europe, there were a number of pockets of remarkable passive resistance activities and so forth. They were all remarkably effective. They were really marvelous expressions of how we could deal with human violence. But nevertheless, only a few decades later, we see that that system has also failed. That system has failed because those people who have been the greatest recipient of the benefits of this method now are engaged themselves in violent activities among themselves and with other people. It is a situation that makes us to wonder whether there is another missing element in this whole process of a human beings becoming victorious over violence. In that respect, I'd like to share with you a new thought, namely that violence doesn't have an existence in and of itself. Yesterday, Mr. Tahirzadeh spoke about the same concept, that evil doesn't have an existence in and by itself. Evil is a non-existence of good. If we consider that, then we can say that violence is the non-existence of what is the opposite of violence. That something fundamentally is missing, and when that thing is missing, the result is violence. It's important to do this because if you think of violence having a reality, then you have to do something about that reality. But if you think that violence is non-existence of something, you focus your energies to bring that thing that doesn't exist so that when it comes there, then everything would be all right. I give you a medical analogy. You can have a person that suddenly has a disease that bleeds all over. So you say, okay, we pick up all kind of band-aids and we put one band-aid here and one band-aid here and everything. So band-aid the person so that he wouldn't bleed. And then this person suddenly finds that his bones are getting very soft and cannot walk. You say, okay, we put all kind of sticks and wrap it around the bones so that can walk. And the person becomes weak. And you say, okay, a person is becoming weak, so we find a couple of other people to carry him around or put him in a wheelchair. And then gradually the person starts not being able to breathe. We say, well, let's give him oxygen. And if that doesn't work, we just give him a pump that constantly pumps his chest so that he can have the necessary oxygen. And it goes on and on and on, which is what's happening in the medical model today. However, if we had paused for a moment and say, let's see what is happening with this person. Could it be that this person doesn't have something that should have? And we investigate and find that he lacks vitamin C. Now, which route should we go? If you consider the disease as the reality, you go the route of the band-aid and of the sticks and of the wheelchair and of the oxygen tent and so forth. If you go the route that no, the disease means that something is missing, and let's find out what is missing, then you find the vitamin C, you give it to the person improves. The same approach to violence seems to be in order. And it is a model that is used by the Baha'i faith. I want to share with you two quotes, dialogues. The first dialogue is taking place in the prison between Socrates and Crito. Crito comes. This is the night before Socrates is going to die. And Crito says to Socrates, "Nor can I think that you are justified, Socrates, in betraying your own life when you might be saved. This is playing into the hands of your enemies and destroyers. And moreover, I should say that you were betraying your children, for you might bring them up and educate them, instead of which you go away and leave them, and they will have to take their chance. I beseech you, therefore, Socrates, to be persuaded by me and to do as I say." And Socrates says, "Dear Crito, I cannot put away the reasons which I have before given, the principles which I have hitherto honored and revered, I still honor. And unless we can find other and better principles on the instant, I am certain not to agree with you. No, not even if the power of the multitude could inflict many more imprisonments, confiscations, deaths, frightening us like children with hobgoblin terror." The next dialogue took place only a few years ago. There was this Baha'i in Mahabad. He was one of the trusted merchants of the town in Iran. A fellow merchant who was a Muslim had been called to the Islamic court because of some wrongs that he had done. He asked this Baha'i merchant, who was the most respected merchant in town, if he would be willing to go as a character witness to the court and testify on his behalf. And he had agreed. The judge had spoken for a few minutes, and this is reported by Mark Kravitz. He said that the judge was almost completely uninterested and bored with the proceedings until suddenly he found that the witness was a Baha'i. We pick up the dialogue there. The judge is Sadiq Khalkhali, the Islamic judge. "So you are a Baha'i?" And Bahadur Vojdani responds, the witness, "Yes." "Judge, then you must convert immediately to true faith of Islam, otherwise you will have to pay the sum of 500,000 tumans, approximately $80,000. Witness, "No." Judge, "What do you mean, no?" Witness, "I cannot pay this sum. Even if I sold my shop and my home, I could not possibly realize 500,000 tumans. Judge, "In that case, you will simply deny your ungodly beliefs and you will be discharged." Witness, "No." Judge, "You will not say no this time. Your life depends on it. Think the matter over carefully." Witness, "I do not have the money you want from me, and if I recant it, I will be a liar before God. You surely cannot force me to do this." Judge, "There is no God but God, and Muhammad is his prophet. Make up your mind quickly." Witness, "No, I cannot deny my faith." Judge, "May God forgive you, I sentence you to death." The witness was taken out and shot. These two dialogues show us a new way of dealing with violence. Here we are dealing with the concept that the most important responsibility of us as human beings and as human societies is to safeguard the integrity of our humanness. The most important thing is that we do not allow our humanness to be taken away from us. Because if our humanness is taken away, we no longer exist as human. From perspective of Socrates and perspective of this Baha'i and from the perspective of all the enlightened peoples of the world, human beings are created noble beings, beings capable of knowledge, of love, of spiritual qualities. As such, the whole purpose of this creation is to allow those qualities to come to fruition. You cannot allow those qualities to come to fruition if you deny them, if you do not live the life that would support those qualities to enhance and to grow, if you don't create a society that would not do that. Now, adding this principle to the concept of the passive resistance or non-violence, really, gives us a new energy to deal with violence. The Babi dispensation, which lasted 19 years, which is the first 19 years of the Baha'i era, was the era of expectancy for the coming of the time when the peace would be possible, when unity would be possible. During that era, the followers of the Bab allowed themselves certain degree of violence. They defended themselves when they were attacked. And in the process of them defending themselves, on three different occasions, a number of the soldiers were killed by the Babis. Because of that, in a span of 19 years, thousands of the Babis were killed. Their killing was justified in the eyes of the rulers, because here was a group extremely enthusiastic, extremely powerful, filled with the spirit of faith, and they were able to create havoc in the life of the Iranian society. The Iranian society responded to that by enormous degree of barbaric cruelty toward these people. The history is written and can be read. Baha'u'llah, however, came and changed that paradigm altogether. Baha'u'llah came and said, under no circumstances, Baha'is, the followers of Baha'u'llah, are allowed to use violence in order to curb violence. But he said something more. He said what the Baha'is have to do to use exactly the opposite of violence in response. In other words, they have to use the forces of love, to harness the forces of love. In one of his remarkable writings, Baha'u'llah describes this process of transformation of the Babi community into the Baha'i community. Is called the law or the tablet of the world. He says, the day of service is now come. I should read a part of it before, which is very interesting. Baha'u'llah is speaking about transformation of the Babi community, which had this dimension of defense, violent defense, self-defense, to the transformation of the Baha'i community was totally free from violence. He said, it was through the grace of God and with the aid of seemly words and praiseworthy deeds that the unsheathed swords of the Babi community were returned to their scabbards. Indeed, through the power of good words, the righteous have always succeeded in winning command over the needs of the hearts of men. What Baha'u'llah did here was that he showed a way for his followers, most of whom at the beginning were the Babis, how to transform their activities to a new, how to deal with violence in a new way, through seemly words and praiseworthy deeds. He describes that process. He says, the day of service is come. Thou must show forth that which will ensure the peace and well-being of the miserable and the downtrodden. Gird up the loins of thine endeavors, that perchance thou mayest release the captive from his chain and enable him to attain unto true liberty. Strife and conflict befit the beasts of the world, of the wild. Beware lest your hands or tongues cause harm to anyone among mankind. Arise, O people, resolve to gain the victory over your own selves. Do not busy yourselves in your own concerns. Let your thoughts be fixed upon that which will rehabilitate the fortunes of mankind and sanctify the hearts and souls of men. This can best be achieved through pure and holy deeds, through a virtuous life and a goodly behavior. This tablet, this statement of Baha'u'llah goes on to describe many dimensions of the new approach to violence. It is an approach in which you harness the forces of love, and by harnessing the forces of love, by responding to aggression with love, with the opposite, you create a totally different milieu. A good example of it is the situation of the Baha'is in Iran during the last 6 years, 7 years. In Iran, hundreds of thousands of people have been killed. The Islamic Revolution in Iran has killed many, many of its enemies. When they came to power, they considered the Baha'is as one of their most important enemies that they wanted to destroy. 204 or 205 Baha'is have been martyred so far. I like to put before you that one of the reasons that this has happened is because the Baha'is of Iran have harnessed the forces of love in the face of this absolutely brutal condition. The dynamics of this process are very complex. I will not have the time to describe them in depth, nor I have really fully capable of doing it. But I like to suggest that one area of study for us is the study of these dynamics, of how the dynamics of love, the forces of love, are used to become victorious over human violence. Then the Baha'i community moved from this process of developing a new paradigm, a new way of dealing with violence, by trying to establish a community, a world community of people first. The way that the Baha'is did, by for creating a world community of people was first focusing on the notion of unity.